recording.
You're listening to
Source News
on 4EB Community Radio, presented by Griffith University students.
Hello and welcome to the Source News. I'm Tanem Stokes.
And I'm Trista McDonald. We have an exciting show for you all today, covering topics from the role AI has in the current writers and actors strike to the rise of pickleball in Australia. Before we jump in, Tanem, has there been anything exciting happening in the world of sport?
Yes, Trista, it's a very exciting weekend for all things sport. The quarterfinals of the FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off tomorrow, with Spain facing up against the Netherlands at 11 a.m, which is followed by Japan vs Sweden at 5:30 p.m. The Matildas have advanced and they play France on Saturday night. We wish them the best of luck in the quarterfinals. In the NRL, the Broncos take on the Eels in a blockbuster clash tomorrow night. The Broncos still have a chance to win their first minor premiership since 2000, while the Eels are fighting for their spot in the top 8, so it will be a great game to watch. So yes, Trista, lots of exciting things happening. I have not made any plans Saturday night. I will be on the couch at home cheering on the Matildas. That's all for sport today. Now, just a quick weather update.
With July being amongst some of the warmest winter months on record, this seemingly is persisting through the month of August. The Gold Coast had a sunny day today with a high of 23 degrees and an estimated low tonight of 14. Brisbane had similar conditions at 24 degrees with temperatures set to drop tonight to 13. Tomorrow looks very similar in conditions with an estimated high on the GC of 25, as Brisbane has a predicted high of 27. With some warm days predicted, Tanem, we can start to brace for a hot summer later this year.
Thank you, Trista. I'm sure everyone here on the Gold Coast will take full advantage of the warm weather this summer. Graduation season steadily approaching, thousands of students are gearing up to enter the workforce. But will their degrees alone be enough, or does employability mean more? Amira Abakura reports.
Our employability is the most important trait to develop as university students. As universities put more emphasis on extracurriculars and activities outside of uni, it's becoming increasingly clear that a high GPA is simply not enough. Employers need resumes padded with volunteering, internships, work experience, and university clubs and societies. Nursing student Emily Akrami is an employer's dream, with a schedule packed with extracurriculars.
Go on placement for 8 hours, get this assignment done, content to do. My volunteer job, I also work in a healthcare job.
Like most university students, Emily is setting herself up for graduate success, but possibly at her own expense. Emily goes on to speak about the impacts she's faced trying to juggle her commitments.
There is no balance, it's just sacrifice. You choose to do that 2,000 word assignment for 3 days straight and not have a conversation with your mother about, you know, are you doing okay? I was highly anxious. I was so stressed to the point that I lost my period for 4 months. It was sacrificing my own mental health.
This story does not start and finish with Emily. It's echoed by thousands of students who are feeling the same pressure of gaining employment after graduating. If it comes at such a detriment to our mental and sometimes even physical health, why do we continue to load our plates? Why is Emily pushing herself to such an extent? The answer is, of course, because we need to set ourselves apart in the eyes of our future employers.
They want people who have the experience to back them up. If I don't have that, it's not going to completely derail my whole application, but it's definitely going to make me less likely to get a job at the end of my degree.
The requirements of employers and the workplace have arguably never been so high. Spending years studying and earning a degree and still not knowing for sure if you have the skills or qualifications that you need as a graduate is a scary reality most of us face. Senior lecturer and head of Department for Employment Relations, Dr. Amy Shaw, was able to shed some light onto why this is.
The changing nature in terms of the world of work has provided different skill set in terms of what employers are looking for. We are seeing a higher need now for soft skills in the workplace. These are skills such as communication, teamwork, leadership, empathy, resilience.
Soft skills have been growing in importance for years, but have been expedited by the COVID-19 pandemic and people increasingly choosing remote work. A LinkedIn study showed that only 37% of employers felt their entry-level employees had the soft skills necessary for the workplace. This may explain why universities are encouraging students to take on more while they're still studying and able to develop these skills easier. Dr. Shaw also places blame on technological advances rendering hard skills redundant.
We're no longer needing so much the technical operational skills because a lot of those can be done by machines. So this is where these soft skills are so important. And you don't learn those soft skills from getting a good GPA. You learn through the extracurricular type activities. It does put a lot of extra pressure on students.
Extracurricular activities can help us develop soft skills. But how do we know if we're choosing the right ones? Dr. Shaw advises students should think carefully about what responsibilities we add on.
I don't believe it's about being involved in everything and anything. I think it's really important to be strategic, starting to think, okay, I really love doing that. What more can I do in that space externally, so extracurricular or in the community? For those who already know what career they want, I'd be looking at certain organisations that I'm wanting to work for and what are their values. I'd be thinking about what the market is doing, thinking about the location. If you're wanting to stay on the Gold Coast, like what does the market look like there?
Strategically and critically thinking about our futures are the keys to success. Doing what's best for you now is doing what's best for your future.
It will reduce your stress and things because you'll be really sort of specific and focused on where you're going to spend your energy and time.
Developing your employability is important, but not as important as your mental and physical well-being. If you're struggling, support services are available on all Griffith campuses.
Thank you, Amira, for that story. It's important to be reminded that being a university student isn't all about our GPA. But also about what other skills we can learn along the way.
In Hollywood, where the line between reality and fiction blurs and blends, a new kind of revolution is underway. A revolution of algorithms and binary code, rather than sweat and steam. Pippa Barclay has the story.
As artificial intelligence moves beyond our smartphones, it's making waves in the film industry, entering the areas of screenwriting, visual effects, and even acting. Deakin University lecturer and Australian Research Council grantee, Dr. Lucinda McKnight, has been researching AI's impact on writing. Dr. McKnight describes the current future of AI to be the fourth industrial revolution.
AI has already had an enormous impact on writing. The release of ChatGPT in November last year has really sped up the pace of change.
With AI's expanding capability, Hollywood production studios want to use generative writing tools such as ChatGPT to replace roles currently done by screenwriters.
You can use something like ChatGPT as one of these examples of a generative writing tool, and you can work in dialogue with it. You can prompt it to actually do writing for you. There are so many ways that it has completely sort of revolutionised the idea of what writing can be.
In July, the Actors and Radio Artists Trade Union, SAG-AFTRA, joined the Writers Guild of America's strike over wages and AI. Production studios are wanting to scan background actors for one day's pay to then use these scans for future use. Aspiring actor Emma Nielsen describes her concerns about this proposal.
It's already a hard industry to break into, and if you're only getting paid a day's worth for your image to be used for more than a day's worth of filming, it'd be harder to actually make a living than it already is.
Although the potential issues AI is causing won't just affect actors and screenwriters.
A lot of people get their footings in the industry through extras work, and often people get scouted through that. It'll be harder to find actors that have experience on screen.
The potential use of AI-generated background actors in Hollywood has the potential to shrink the pool of future screen actors.
I've been wanting to go into screen acting as my kind of leading form of income. I would likely pursue a career more on stage acting because it's just more authentic than these screen reproductions of people.
There is still hope. If the trade unions and production studios reach an agreement, there is space for both AI and screenwriters to collaborate.
If AI is incorporated into screenwriting on the screenwriter's terms, not on the employer's terms, that it will have really generative uses, for example, to help create dialogue. But I think that the creativity, the integrity and the professionalism of screenwriters needs to be respected, number one, and they need to be in charge of how they want to use AI in their own practice to enhance it rather than to replace it.
If the trade unions don't receive the AI protection they're striking for, then other industries will be at a higher risk of AI disruption.
I think that we should all be very worried about what will happen if the writers and the actors who joined them in striking are not successful in getting commitment from employers about how they're going to use generative AI. Because I think all knowledge workers and creative workers' jobs really will be under threat. But apart from the climate crisis, this is probably the most important stuff that's happening in the news at the moment and just in society. The fourth industrial revolution.
Thanks for that insight, Pippa. And who knows, soon you may be listening to radio broadcasts just like this one, except the voice you'll be hearing won't be mine, it'll be AI.
To catch the perfect wave is a craving for many Aussies. But do the materials used impact our iconic beaches and oceans? Trista McDonald has a story.
The Gold Coast is home worldwide to the most surfers per capita. With glorious beaches and a laid-back culture, surfing is an integral part of the GC life. Dating back to 1917, the GC was described as a surfer's paradise, which led to, in 1933, the township then known as Elston was officially renamed Surfers Paradise. With the climate discussion being a part of our everyday discourse, it is important now to ask the question, are traditional surf products impacting our oceans? Local business owner of Green Planet Surfer, Donovan Van Putten, talks about his long-term love affair with the ocean and how becoming aware of his impact spurred him on to create his Eco Surf Works.
And that really started looking at, you know, plastics and whatnot. And then I sort of started thinking about my love for the ocean, and I actually started recycling the wax on my surfboard. So, like, I'd scrape it off and then I'd heat it up and then sort of reduce it down again and try and take out the impurities like sand and whatnot and then re-pour it and reuse it. And I did that for a little while. And then one day I was at a market and I walked past and I saw a block of beeswax and I was like, gee, I wonder if I can make wax out of that. And that's just, I just started researching and they're, oh, yeah, I can. So I bought some and then I tried it. And 12 months later and probably 90 samples later and lots of surfing sessions, I sort of came up with something that was a good product that was comparable to other products out there.
A study from the University of Berkeley back in 2020 estimated that the amount of CO2 emissions released in the production of a surfboard ranges anywhere between 170 to 250 kilograms throughout its process. Not only that, but local board maker and business owner of Rockaday Surfboards, Shane Luke, chatted with us on the wastefulness of big surf corporations.
Probably more waste is produced than actually material that's left, you know, as a surfboard, because of things like the, now most boards are made from CNC machines, so they're cut, not handcrafted. Now those big companies that have become more global orientated, they're getting their boards made in Thailand and in Indonesia because it's cheaper, materials are cheaper, they're inferior, and so they're just looking at profit margins. And I think that's the companies, they're driven by money, and then the people buying it are looking at just what's cheaper as well. And because it's made overseas, you know, there's some coming in that are $300 and $400 for a brand new board, and that's more than my material costs for making a board. But that board will only last, you know, 3 to 6 months, whereas mine are lasting, there's boards that are like 7 years old now since I started using those materials, and they're still going great.
According to ReportLinker Market Research, the global surf market is set to increase by 4% over the next 4 years, estimated by 2030 to reach $5.5 billion. Associate Professor at Griffith University, Kerry Foxwell Norton, is a research expert in environmental and marine communications. She herself is a surfer and reinforced the same idea of impacting needing to change on an industry level.
First issue in terms of surfing and sustainability is about, I mean, there's some raw end of the conversation that has to do around industry and markets and people's demand, consumer demand for products that are more sustainable, that don't hurt the planet and its people, as are our current practices, clearly, based on what's happening around climate and other ecological catastrophes.
So what should we do? With numerous local businesses invested in surf sustainability, it is a great opportunity to look at what is on our doorstep and do our part to keep our oceans healthy for generations to come.
I didn't even understand the impact that surf products have on our oceans. That is a super interesting perspective. With all this warm weather, I might put these products to the test.
Griffith University is well known for its diverse and welcoming culture. With this comes an influx of international students. But with the increasing stress of the renting crisis, what is the most beneficial accommodation for our international community? Madeline Kelly has more.
Griffith University accepts a percentage of international students every year. With the current housing crisis, it begs the question of where the best place is to live when moving to Australia.
Living on campus has always been a popular choice among uni students. With this in mind, the question must be asked, is it the most beneficial accommodation?
Griffith University Village Community Manager Monica Babbitts speaks on what living on RES provides for international students.
Well, as an international myself, coming to Australia can be a bit daunting. There's a lot of things that are different, and here at GUV we have a pretty large population of international students from all around the world, and so I think being in an environment with other people who are going through the same thing as you can be very helpful. I think for international students, because we have such a large population, there's a sense of community for people that are new to Australia. For example, when the students are checking in, we give them a little handout with information about the grocery stores, a chemist, it's called a chemist here, I'm used to it being called the pharmacy. Little cultural differences like that, you know, it's person to person, which I think can be very helpful when you're going to a big school. It's like family, and so we help each other out.
The goal of staff at GUV is to invoke a sense of community for residents so they feel welcomed when in a new country. Ridwan Sidney speaks on his experience as an international resident and whether the intended sense of community is achieved.
The residential program over here at GUV has been one of the best things that I have been a part of, because it has allowed me to meet a whole bunch of new people every trimester over here. And over the past few years, I've made some great friends. So I would say it allows you to, you know, have a lot of interaction and making friends. Also, get you to learn more about this country and, you know, the culture over here, the Australian culture as well. As an international student, if you're looking to meet new people, do a lot of new stuff together, then I'd say this is the best place to do it, because I have seen other places to stay and the interactivity between the residents or like students here. So I'd say GUV is the best place to stay here if you want to get to know others, make new friends, learn about Australia, learn about different cultures, because there's a whole lot of people from different backgrounds living here.
Living on campus provides opportunity to make friends and learn the Australian culture. One resident, Amelia Camacho, explains living on campus is a matter of accessibility.
I think it's just what's more accessible for international students, especially because getting a place to rent, like properly rent outside of any sort of like organization, is pretty difficult.
Due to the increasing struggle that both domestic and international students face when finding a place to rent, Amelia deliberates that living on Griffith University Village is a great starter place for international students.
I think that as a starting point for international students is definitely a great place, just because the community is very diverse. And we have people from a lot of backgrounds, nationalities, a lot of people that are doing different courses and degrees. So. And even the same degree that you might be doing. So I think it's great to make connections that way. But I would not stay for more than a year, just because it can get a bit complicated.
Thank you, Madeline, for that report. It is important for international students to understand the benefits of living on campus when considering accommodation.
Artists are at the heart and souls of our communities. They enrich our lives through their creativity and talent. But did you know that many local and emerging artists struggle to make ends meet? Isabel Lawson has the more.
Imagine being a young artist, bursting with creativity, but unsure of how to navigate the challenges of the industry. For many talented individuals, this is a reality. Fortunately, programs such as ArtKeeper are changing the game in support of local and emerging artists. This program run by the Home of the Arts provides a collaborative and creative space, giving young artists a jumpstart into the industry. Producer and local sector at the Home of the Arts, Ashley Wheeler, states this program not only provides a space for artists, but is also considered as a job.
So we wanted to design a program that supported artists with that consistency of work, but we also hope sort of beyond that, that the program has a message that art making is work, like plumbing is work and nursing is work, and like all workers, we think that artists deserve income security.
For all emerging artists out there, Wheeler emphasises having a high profile is not a requirement when applying.
One of the beauties of the program is that it's a job. So as long as you have Australian working rights, you're eligible to apply. Three of the four of our artists in the last cohort actually consider themselves emerging or early career. So it's certainly an opportunity that emerging artists can apply for, you know, and I would really encourage them to do that.
Local musician known as Cold Ghost is just one of the many success stories emerging from the ArtKeeper program. Cold Ghost reflects on his experience.
Just having an organisation believe in your project was really fantastic, because often when you are doing it by yourself, you're doing it on your own time and you haven't got a bit of that feedback to sort of try ideas. All these artists are taking these big risks and investing so much time to sort of get their art out, and it really takes the audience to keep that momentum going.
Deputy Director of Research for the Queensland Conservatorium, Dr. Alex Callio, is Chair of the National Access for Music for Inclusion and Equity Network. She delves deeper into the role which music education plays in an artist's journey and society.
I think better education and support systems are needed not only to foster a thriving artistic community, but to foster a healthy society. And when there's decades of reliable research that demonstrates music's benefits for social inclusion, school engagement, mental health and well-being, I mean, even young people's desistance from crime, it's kind of baffling that we're not valuing that.
According to Dr. Callio, challenges artists face are not solely due to their craft. There is a need for a more holistic approach to music education.
I strongly believe that we can support local artists and create these vibrant creative spaces in all of our communities by also addressing the barriers that impede access to and participation in the arts for everybody. And I wonder what we might achieve for artists, but also society, if we were to reconceptualise music. I think it would change a lot for artists.
The message is clear. Supporting local and emerging artists as an audience, organisation or educational system is crucial. For audiences passionate about music and art, together we can ensure creativity continues to enrich our lives and communities.
Thank you, Isabel, for that report. What an inspiring story for all our emerging artists. It's great to hear there are programs out there like ArtKeeper to help support them.
Now, you may or may not have heard about the sport pickleball. This unique sport is taking the world by storm, combining a mix of tennis, badminton and ping pong, which is attracting players from all ages. Tanum Stokes has the story.
Pickleball is a sport which is rapidly growing over in America, with sports stars such as LeBron James and Tom Brady investing into the sport. But what about its popularity here in Australia? According to Pickleball Association Australia, the sport is growing 20% a year and is continuing to gain traction down under. Here in the Sunshine State, there are over 4,000 participants playing pickleball at social events. I spoke with Gold Coast Pickleball Association President Alan Boyer about the rise of the sport down under. He says that he has seen memberships rise significantly over the last few years.
Gold Coast Pickleball Club started 4 years ago with seven members. We now have 540. It's been an explosion. Pickleball in Australia has, over the last 4 years, developed at the same rate that we have, and with that has come enormous levels of competition, both at club level, seniors level, and also there's money suddenly come into it.
Pickleball can be played as singles or doubles on a court that measures 44 feet long and 20 feet wide, which is smaller than a tennis court, meaning players are closer together. The centre of the net is 2 inches lower than the middle of a tennis net. Players use a small paddle to hit a plastic hollow ball with holes throughout, aka the pickleball. To win, players must play to 11 and win by 2 points. But what makes pickleball so popular? Why are so many people starting to play pickleball over tennis?
Accessibility is one thing for a certain part of the generation. The older generation, they don't have to run as much. We can get 4 pickleball courts on 1 tennis court. So it cuts it down by that percentage. It's completely accessible. There's not that much running. And most of the game is played at the net. So once you get to the net, it's rapid fire. Now, rapid fire for a 30-year-old is a lot more rapid than it is for a 70-year-old. So it caters for everyone in terms of their abilities and ages. We've had a massive influx of younger players picking up pickleball.
Australia can't get enough of pickleball, with new players stating just how fun and easy the game is to pick up, which gets them addicted.
Oh, it's a very unique sport. It's very cheap, easy to pick up on as well. Get to meet people young and old who have been playing the game for a while. And yeah, it's just very fun to play. I just generally enjoy it.
Pickleball is here to stay, and Australians of all ages are getting behind it. There are many places to play pickleball on the Gold Coast, so bring your friends and head to your nearest court to give it a try.
How exciting to see a new sport come up the ranks. What are the odds we will see pickleball at the Brisbane Olympics in 2032?
Well, I have my fingers crossed, Trista. Well, that's everything we have time for on today's show.
Thank you so much for tuning in on this lovely Thursday afternoon. We will see you all next time. I am your host, Trista McDonald.
And I'm Tanem Stokes.
And you have been listening to The Source News.
Are we recording?
You're listening to
Source News
on 4EB Community Radio, presented by Griffith University students.